another episode of Constructor Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I am joined by my co-host, a silver bronze pro who's going to get gold this year, Michael Hinderocker.
Man, that's so complicated. I don't even know what I am anymore. I don't know who I am.
I actually have a complicated question.
Yeah.
So let's say you get silver at this Pro Tour.
Okay.
Does that qualify you for three Pro Tours?
I don't really know.
I actually don't know either. I was thinking about that on my car ride taking my son to his babysitters today. I'm like, all right, so Michael's going to be at 15 pro points minimum at the Pro Tour, right?
I think 14.
14,
but
okay.
I'm honestly not sure.
It's kind of confusing. That's fine. It's pretty close. So if he gets a six-point finish, this was my thought, is it locks you for silver. But if you get silver, do you get the same thing? So do you get the pro, because I think to get 6 points, you have to X5, right?
Yeah, right. To get okay. six additional
so
points,
you
would
get
have
a
to
pro
X5.
Point. You get a pro tour for the X5. You get a pro tour for the silver, and then you get a pro tour next year, right?
I think, but it's possible that I'm wrong.
I also think that I wasn't sure either.
Yeah, I'm not like. The plan is mostly just to play, and then we'll sort of try to figure that stuff out after, because it was confusing before, and it's more confusing now.
Yeah, now that you're already silver, it's like, wait, what do I have to do?
Yeah, I don't really know.
Also,
so like,
will you be silver? Because next year it changes, which makes it even more confusing, because next year you have to be silver at the beginning of the year, which means you lose three pro points. You lose more than that. You lose...
Because this quarter is still good for the beginning. It's after the first quarter.
Oh, it's after the first quarter. Okay, so you could still qualify for the first Pro Tour. This is way too complicated, man.
Yeah, I'm not that smart, really. Like, this is... it goes over my head.
You know who can help you out with this, though? Not in the way of doing this, but actually qualifying you for a Pro Tour is Oasis Games. They can do that by you buying Magic the Gathering cards from them. You can check them out at oasisgamesslc.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using code CCMTG at checkout. And you can get 4% off every order by using code Would That Be Good. So there is some confusion around Would That Be Good. I'm going to clear up. We had a few questions about using the code too many times. I don't actually think you can use the code too many times. What will happen, I know for sure, is if you've bought enough cards from Oasis Games and the 4% off isn't more than the percentage you would get back in store credit, because Oasis has a store credit deal. So if you're getting 5% in store credit back, they'll pick that for you automatically over the 4% you would get off. Because the way Crystal Commerce is set up is it will only give you one discount at a time. So Oasis is like, okay, we'll just give them the highest discount that they can get. So they just pick that one for you automatically. Now, I have been told that people are not at that point and they're being told they can't use it. So I'll talk to Alex and Nick and find out where that's at. But this is a good problem to have. It means that...
You shouldn't be doing that, though. You're definitely allowed to use the same... You're definitely yeah. It's like
well,
coupon
it,
code.
It will not take it if you have more than 5% in store credit kickback.
Sure.
Because of Crystal, not because of Oasis. It just won't let you use multiple discounts. However, I just wanted to let people know that I am looking into that and seeing what's going on and just double checking for you guys, because you guys are important to me, and I appreciate people reaching out to me. And also, I appreciate you guys using it enough that this is a problem for you. Like, letting these sponsors know that you're going to them because of us is really helpful to me and Michael. So thank you so much. It means the world to us. You can also check out our other sponsor at the Mana Base. You can check out Nikachu, one of the Merfolk Master, who allegedly
call him the Mason Crusher.
That's what I think he is. Because Mason basically lies about beating him just to try and make it not the Mason. But you can also check out their sponsor at Fusion Gaming and check out your Shield product from them. We really appreciate the Mana Base and everything that they're doing for us right now. I think that basically if I buy Magic cards at this point, it's always from Fusion Gaming. Or Oasis. Like, these are just the places that I buy Magic cards at this point, so I couldn't recommend the two of them highly enough, and I definitely could recommend checking those other content providers over at the Mana Base, and just we really appreciate our sponsorship. It really does help us when it comes to Magic the Gathering. Sponsorships are super awesome for this podcast. I don't know about Michael, but it makes Magic so much easier for me.
Yeah, it's true. It really does. And they are good companies to be associated with. I'm happy to be associated with both those companies.
Oh, yeah. So, quick story. The Fusion Gaming sent me an entire deck that I bought from them. And it was in quadruple wrapped in top loaders. Like, it was the crate. I sent a picture to Alex. I was like, dude, these guys are shipping right. My cards were in pristine condition. There was no way they could get hurt. It was quite amazing. So, if you're looking for awesome shipping, Fusion Gaming is a place that you can get that done. So, let's go into our first segment, which is hashtag always improving. Before we do that, I just want to say really quick that I want to give a huge shout out to the patrons. It really means the world to me that you guys are here. I have a special announcement. I'm actually splitting the patronage between constructed criticism and limited time only. The main reason I'm doing this, and one of the questions that I got asked is, like, Spencer, why would you split these? And the truth is that there are way, way, way more constructed criticism listeners than limited time only listeners. And Michael deserves to be compensated for his time. I want to pay for GP entry fees for him when we can. And I want to do the same thing for Danny when I can for him. But it's so lopsided that it's unfair to Danny. And so I want to split these up. I want to get to the point where I can be paying Mason. I want to be paying Michael. I want to be paying Danny. I'm going to be doing everything I can. Because right now, a lot of it comes for me paying for my GPs, paying for Michael's entry fees, and then when we can, paying for stuff for the listeners, giving out cards, giving out giveaways, doing stuff. But honestly, if I want to do giveaways for both shows, if I want to be paying all of my producers and all my content creators, I need to split them up. So I just want to make that transparent because I believe in transparency, and that's kind of where we're at right now. But shout out to all the patrons that we have. Oh, go ahead, Michael.
It makes sense. I mean, ultimately, it just gives you better information, right?
It does. It's really helpful.
It's just clear information. That's all.
Yeah, and it's clear information for you guys, right? Like support the creators that you want to support. Support the shows you want to support. Do the things that you can do. If that means you need to split them between both shows, that means you split them between both shows. We understand. I just want to be transparent with people about why it's happening and what's going on. So. But you can support this show directly by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. Become a patron of the show. It means the world to us. It really, really does. Awesome conversation with some of our patrons this week. We'll be doing our Patreon podcast every week we try and invite patrons to be a part of the show. Next week, we will be doing a sideboarding episode requested by the patrons. So hashtag always improving is the point of this podcast. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And we want to be doing what we can all the time to be getting better ourselves. So, Michael. We already talked about how you want a PPTQ, or an RPTQ, sorry. What have you done this week to get better at Magic the Gathering?
I think just, like, making the decision to play Lantern and stepping outside of my comfort zone a little bit. I know that, we often talk about sort of whether it's better to play a deck you're comfortable with or whether it's better to play the right deck. But ultimately, Lantern is the sort of deck where you end up playing a lot of face-up magic, and if you just believe you can consistently make the correct decisions, I think, you know, I think I played like 5 matches with it total before playing at the RPTQ, and I think sort of knowing your range and knowing what you think you're capable of is really important when it goes into deck selection. I was paid off for that choice, had a lot of really good matchups, was really happy with that.
Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about how this happened? Like, how did you get on Lantern?
So we were testing some other stuff, and I was kind of at Lantern in the back of my mind because I watch, there's a guy named Canister, I think Peter Glagowski, who top-aided Pro Tour Ixalan, who basically invented the, like, War of Invention Lantern list. And I always, I watch him stream it every once in a while. He's a funny guy, and he's really, really, really good with Lantern. But every once in a while during the stream, he'll open up his Excel document, which, like, tracks his win percentage, and he has, like, one matchup below 60%. Mm-hmm. Like, think about how insane that is when you're actually tracking your matches and you have, like, one matchup under 60. So I found that, and then I found a sideboard guide based on an older list from that was done by Justin Cohen, who I guess is not really playing Magic right now, except for Lantern.
Okay.
In a strange twist of events. So I felt really confident that I had a good list, that I had a good sideboard guide, that I had a good handle on what I was trying to do in all these matchups. And just, like, even though I hadn't played the deck a lot, the information was good enough that I thought I could go with it anyways.
So how do you pull the trigger on something like this? How do you know when the information that you have is sufficient?
Well, I think a lot of it is, like, being comfortable with sort of where you are as a player. If that's something that sounds, like, sort of reasonable to you, and you are secure enough in your ability as a player that you're not going to be really upset if it goes poorly, partially because of your bad play, that's okay. And if that idea sounds terrifying to you and, like, a terrible idea, recognizing that maybe that's not a good choice for you is, you know, totally reasonable and important as well.
Cool.
So I think just, like, just being honest with yourself about what you are capable of, but also just what you're comfortable with.
Sure. So first of all, congratulations. You're just one step closer to gold. I really hope that, you can get some solid PT finishes this year, because that's really the jump from silver to gold. So I hope that whatever you need from me, I'm happy to help you. Congratulations, man. Like, it's cool to see you continuing your success.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So for me this week, I have been playing an inappropriate amount of Magic for a manager and a father, husband. I don't know. It feels like I played a lot of Magic. And the reason for it is because of the GP. I played probably just as much Magic a few weeks ago, trying to prepare for the last GP I played in. And so I have a pretty strong belief, and I think Michael agrees. Michael and Danny and I have all talked about this, but, you know, qualifying for the Pro Tour and getting Pro points, the way to do it is Grand Prix. And I know that. Michael knows that. Danny knows that. We've seen that through our time in Magic, and so preparing for Grand Prix is, like, kind of the thing that I can do right now as an MTG dad. But I noticed something over my last couple of leagues, in that I'm taking more my limited approach to mulliganing and applying it to my standard approach to mulliganing, and I think that it's completely incorrect. And Michael and I have talked a lot about how mulliganing is, like, the number one skill that you can acquire in Magic that'll, like, just give you the highest jump in your win percentage. And the thing is that in Limited, your deck is so much smaller that you can take certain mulligan decisions in your head and, like, do the math easier than you can in Constructed. With the smaller deck size, like, you know your exact number on your curve. You know, you can do pretty quick math to, like, determine, like, how good a hand is. And it is a lot harder in Constructed. And your opponent's decks and your decks are just so much better and more powerful. So in Limited, you'll mulligan aggressively, but you'll also keep aggressively, according to the math.
Yeah, I mean, you're mostly, like, in most Limited formats, it's really hard to ship back, like, spells and lands that cast them.
Yes. And in Constructed, like, you obviously, like, you need to complete your synergies, and, like, so much is going on that you have so many decision trees in your mulligans. And I noticed, like, halfway through my league the other day, I was like, I am keeping limited hands in Constructed, and this is bad. Like, this is a bad thing. So I kind of worked on that today. I noticed it during like round 3 of a league that I lost because of my decision. And you just, I think that you have to recognize that there are different skill sets and recognize those skill sets and apply the correct logic accordingly.
Yeah, I mean, I think fundamentally the easiest way to sum it up is this. In Limited, your decks are usually kind of bad.
Yes.
And if you have a hand that looks like it's going to, you know, like, cast creatures and have a removal spell, there's a pretty good chance that just beats anything your opponent can really do. Right? In Constructed, your deck is good, and when you mulligan, your hands are still usually good. They're just with one less card. So
right.
If your hand
you have to recognize that your opponent's deck is also likely very good.
Right. So if your hand is like, play Winding Constrictor, I'm not
do
really
nothing.
Sure after that. Yeah. Right. It's probably just not going to beat anything.
Yeah. So it's really important for me as Michael's using the deck that I've been playing as an example, like, it's really important for me to recognize, like, what does this hand do in this format, in this context? Because it's really easy to go onto autopilot in mulligan decisions to be like, well, this is lands and spells. Like, I have three spells that I can cast. But in fact, it's like, well, these spells actually did nothing.
Attune with Aether is the ultimate one that gets me sometimes.
Man.
You'll just look at a hand and you'll be like, oh man, this hand has so many spells I can cast, but it's like two lands and three Attune with Aethers. And you're like, well, this is
actually
just
nothing.
A five lander. Yeah.
Yeah, so first of all, I improve by noticing this, and then second of all, I'm going to be improving by working on this before the GP. So let's go on to our main segment of the show. So you might have noticed the intros were long, everything was long. That's because there's no training grounds. This is a mega rankings week. So we're going to talk about 9 decks in Standard. We're going to talk about where we think they stand. We're going to talk about what we think of them overall, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. So let us start with what happened. So there were 3 Standard GPs this weekend. 3. And we're going to talk about, we put all the points together, so they get 6 points for first, 5 points for second, 4 points for top 4, 3 points for top 8, 2 for top 32, and then 1 for top 64. I couldn't find any top 64s. In fact, the amount of information that they gave us on these GPs was less than they typically give us, which I found weird. But let's go with what we have. So tied for 9th place with 3 points, meaning it did in fact have a top 8. We have Sultai Pummeler. And Sultai is a little bit liberal with this because the only black card I believe in the 75 is Cartouche of Ambition. But I have played against this deck a few times now on MTGO, Michael. But I actually think this deck, the version that we probably have on our screen right now, might be a little bit worse than the version that has, like, a really good sideboard plan. I think Gerard Fabiano played it at the Pro Tour. It's, like, just straight-up Sultai with Electrostatic Pummeler, and it can sideboard out of that into, like, a Sultai mid-range deck. Like, how do you want to play Pummeler right now?
Yeah, so, I mean, Pummeler is just a tough sell for me with people playing Sultai Energy, but if you don't expect a lot of Sultai Energy, I think this deck is totally reasonable. This deck is probably mostly just Goldfishing Teemer Energy. You basically need one spell to save a Pummeler on average, and if you have that, you almost can't lose.
Oh, yeah. Especially when you think about things like Cartouche of Knowledge. Like,
sure.
This technology being added to these deck lists really helps the deck.
They're going to get basically, you know, it's going to remind you a lot of Limited games, right, where you have, like, one with the winds or whatever. They get one chance to kill it, and if you can, you know, block that chance, then they're just dead.
Well, so, for example, today in an MTGO league, I was playing against just, like, kind of like the Gerard version of this deck. So green-blue, by the way, I think is the common version of this deck right now. And he played a couple of Hydras early through a Servant of the Conduit, I thought for a minute, he had 0 cards in hand, and I was like, well, I'm going to leave myself dead to Cartouche of Knowledge, because nothing else will beat me. He didn't have it, but I do think that the fact that they can now fly over gives them a different edge than the other Pummeler decks had.
For sure. I think that that's really powerful. Just in general, it looks
and
this
Dive
is like
Down
the,
and Blossoming Defense is like...
Yeah, it looks like this is like basically the same 75 that Patrick Dickman played at the Pro Tour.
Okay.
But I think that, like, this deck is just, it's really linear and cohesive.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, decks like this, you can sometimes get a little too cute, where, like, you're playing all these things. Well, if they have this, then I can play this. And if they have this, I can play this. But you really need to be sure is if they don't have it, they die.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think just being, like, generally, well, if you don't have very specific cards, you're never going to beat me.
So
is pretty powerful, and I think that this deck is, you know, powerful and linear.
So you and I and Danny, we've all been proponents of, you know, green red pummeler at one point or another. What is the reason to cut red? Like, you lose interaction on your part, you lose invigorated rampage. Is losing half your pump spells okay in exchange for things like one with the wind and cartouche knowledge?
I think one of the wind and cartouche are like a little bit worse, but not that much than invigorated rampage. I think that Rogue Refiner is probably going to be better than Voltaic Brawler on average. It also makes your deck marginally better against Fatal Push, which is seeing a ton of play right now. And then you get Spell Pierce Negate out of the board.
Well, let's actually talk about the sideboard really quick, because you and I don't think Danny's ever put this way, but you and I have been anti-Greenbelt Rampager for basically as long as it's been in Standard.
Yeah, it is maybe just necessary as part of your, like, aggro boarding plan.
Because you're... So is that because this is green-blue, or is that because... What is the reason?
My guess is that it mostly comes in when Pummeler isn't in the deck anymore. So, like, when you board in, like, Cartouche of Ambition and Greenbelt Rampager and Aethersphere Harvester, I haven't played with this deck at all, but that would be 7 slots, and then you'd board in the Swamp, and you might just go to 21 lands. So that'd be 8 slots, and you would probably cut the 4 Pummelers, 2 Dive Downs, and, like, a 1 with the Wind and a Cartouche or something like that. It's hard for me to say exactly, but you would basically... Or maybe you cut Larger Than Lives instead. I'm not sure. But when you're playing against more aggressive decks, my guess is that the Pummelers are a little bit lackluster sometimes.
Let's go to the next deck really quick, which is a deck that you've played, but not in this flavor. We have Grixis Thopters, also tied with in ninth place. But this deck is playing Aether Swooper. This deck is playing Reverse Engineer. Michael, what is going on, man?
So this is like... take on, I don't know if any of you guys saw that there was like the blue-red Artificer deck that people were messing around with, like Inventor's Goggles with a bunch of Artificers that have Improvised.
Let's be clear, like, four Inventor's Goggles.
Yeah, but this deck honestly looks like nonsense to me. 25 lands is so many.
Was it Pro Tour Kaladesh or Pro Tour Aether Revolt that people were talking about this deck before the Pro Tour? I think it was Aether Revolt, right?
It would have had to have been Aether Revolt. I mean, people...
Because it was the deck that people were like, Metallic Rebuke is broken, here's the deck that can play it.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've played some of, like, a Grixis improvised deck that's a little bit different than this, but...
Well, we might have played, like, 60 of the 75 in testing, or at least me and Danny did. I think you did too, right? It was like right before Grand Prix, was it Portland? Wherever we stayed with me, you, Alex, and Danny before the Pro Tour, we talked about this deck quite a bit.
It's possible. I think in general, though, this deck scares me a little because it's kind of threat light.
Tell me about that.
You just have a lot of cards that don't really do anything. Like, you have a 1 of Chandra, but it's not, like, great in this deck. Inventor's Goggles isn't really...
Scarab God.
Yeah, the Scarab God is not great in this deck. The Pia is okay, but it's, again, not really great in this deck. Whirler is something you're playing, but I don't think it's fantastic in this deck. Like, you're just playing a lot of things. I mean, you have these Decoction modules and, like, 1 of Vehicles and... It's just kind of all over the place. Ultimately, my biggest problem is that you don't really get paid off that much for making these... Like, I can imagine a lot of games where you, like, make a lot of artifacts, but your opponent just has, like, a Whirler Virtuoso and you die to it.
Yeah, so I do agree with you in one sense. I think that this deck has too many do-nothing artifacts. Inventor's Goggle and Decoction Module. If you draw him with 3 lands and 2 of each of those, like, you have to ship it.
Decoction Module might actually be good, just because you can, like, rebuy your
Thopterus. But not in that hand. That's what I'm saying, though. Like,
I mean, 4 seems heavy-handed, and I think a lot of the numbers in this deck are just strange. 25 lands also just seems like a ton.
We have
one actual 5-drop, right?
Let's talk about the things we like about this deck really quick. So, first of all, Maverick Thopterist has always been underplayed, in my opinion. Card is super powerful. Metallic Rebuke, also super powerful, super underplayed. Reverse Engineer is a card that Wizards of the Coast literally thinks is good and hasn't seen any play, finally makes the top end of a GP. But outside of that, like, I think there's a lot of I'm not sure what I'm trying to do going on. Maybe I'm wrong, but...
I feel that way, too. It's sort of all over the place.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried. I think that the Grixis version of this deck might just be a little bit better. Like, the straight-up Grixis.
I can just imagine casting a lot of Reverse Engineers that don't really...
help you?
...draw cards that can win a game of Magic. It seems kind of cool, but I would have to watch this one before I could be sold on it.
Let's go into our 7th place deck. This is the deck that Michael played at the Pro Tour. We have, in 7th place, 4-color Sultai. So I like to call this Sultai Red. I like to differentiate this from 4-color Energy. It's really confusing for a lot of people that they call this 4-color Energy and they call the Teamer deck 4-color Energy. So I'd like to just... let's just call this Sultai Red because it's a completely different deck. Michael, why is this such a different deck?
You're really a base black deck. Not a base. You're like a base black-green deck, basically, that's splashing blue and red. But fundamentally, your best land is Blooming Marsh.
And so this list that we have on screen...
I guess that's what I would say.
Yeah, this list that we have on screen, I actually really like almost all the numbers on this. I know that you are higher on Veraska's Contempt. I don't know that you played any Abrades. But what do you think of this?
I'm playing Abrade, but I don't think Abrade is crazy. Like, I think that card is generally powerful, and your exact mix there is probably personal preference as much as anything.
Yeah. Sorry, I had a little bit of a lag there, but it does look like he had the last Veraska's Contempt in the board. Michael, what do you think of this list compared to the list you played at the Pro Tour?
I mean, it looks really similar, right? Yeah. I mean, I thought about playing, like, Nissa Vital Force and Nicol Bolas, but I was a little bit nervous about getting the mana to cast him. Compared to the Snake deck, I really like Glintsleeve Siphoner, a little more of a control deck, and that's really more what this is. It's kind of a mid-range deck that leans control rather than a mid-range deck that leans aggressive. Yeah. You're trying to play these long games that revolve around Rogue Refiner, Gonti, Glintsleeve Siphoner, Scarab God, kind of, and then you're just trying to have better removal than they do, and that's going to be true most of the time when you have, like, I mean, this guy's playing 10 main deck removal spells, plus 2 Veraska, plus 2 Hostage Taker, and then Gonti can often do an impression as well, so, like, I like this deck. Its biggest problem is that the mana is, like, pretty bad, and...
yeah.
Cutting down to only one swamp is going to make it better until it makes it worse.
Yeah, I do. I played a couple of matches with this deck and also found the mana to be worse, which is what moved me back off of this deck. I do want to say that this is like a crazy Spencer opinion. I believe that Veraska Relic Seeker is the best card in Standard right now. And I think that this deck does the best job of using it.
Yeah, compared to all the other decks I tried Veraska in, I think it's really important the deck has Servant. It makes your Veraska just a lot better.
Which I think is why so many people end up on Teamer Blacks playing Veraska. But, like, this is a true thing. I think in the last 6 leagues I've played, I've never lost a game where I resolved the Veraska. I've lost games with Veraska in my hand, but I've never lost with her in play.
I mean... you play enough, and that won't be true anymore.
Right, you'll have to cast exactly. It's only 6 leagues. It's a weird stat. But, like, she does so much compared to, like, when I first saw the card, I just didn't think about it. Like, in the context of the format, so today I beat Tokens where I killed both of their Anointed Processions with her and made a 2-2. And, like, the game wasn't close.
I mean, it really looks like Obnixilis, except that sometimes it's the really broken version of Obnixilis.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's like, kill this, get a thing that makes me kill your 4-drop with my Fatal Push in hand. That happens literally all the time.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was able to, like, there was a spot where I was able to, like, minus on your Aether Sphere Harvester, Fatal Push your Heart of Kirin in combat, you know, they play another Heart of Kirin, and I ended up trading a Vraska and a Fatal Push for, like, double Heart Harvester. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of nutty.
Yeah, like, if you think about it, it's, like, so often double Vindicate plus. And that's,
yeah.
I would pay 6 mana for that every time. So let's go on to our next deck. This is a deck that I got a lot of crap for saying I don't like. It's Marty Vehicles. I still don't like it, man.
I don't really either. I think it's mana, like it's just hard.
Yeah, like, I really, really like Black-Red. Like, I understand Toolcraft is super powerful. It makes your hearts better. But, like, I don't see it, man.
I can kind of get into this list, though. The 4 Glorybringers are kind of sweet. I think that card's pretty good right now.
Yeah, I picked this list specifically to talk about it, too, because, like, I liked a lot of the numbers. I think, like, 4 Glorybringers is too much for me. That was, like, the only thing for me. I was like, man, I really wish there was 3, and we could find, like, another sweet card to play in that slot. But also, like, Glorybringer might be the best card in Standard right now outside of Nissa, or Vraska, so...
I would be interested to talk to this guy. I'm curious if...
He ended up in 25 lands for a reason, right?
Yeah, I mean, I almost think I would cut the Hazorettes and the Harvesters and play Cultivator's Caravans.
Yeah, that I'm so glad you said that. Like, I was going to also talk about how much I wanted Cultivator's Caravan in this. Because, like, you have Motorist already, right? And, like, Motorist plus Caravan is, like, the biggest thing in Standard. The biggest thing. Plus, like, you can go, like... Cultivator's Caravan into Glorybringer, and then, it's just so much synergy in this deck.
And it fixes, like, your mana, lets you cast Fatal Push off of it. It would be interesting. I'm not sure.
Just play it on 3 and still be leading up Fatal Push.
Yeah, but this list is really intriguing. I haven't seen the one with 4 Glorybringers. Might have to mess around with that a little bit. I think, like, Chandra Glorybringer is really good. I mean, we've seen it in the Teemer Energy shell, but this might be even a better shell for it.
Yeah, I would be interested, but all of the things that we just said, I don't know that you need white for.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest issue is basically that, like, you're just pretty short on your artifact count in general. Like, Spire of Industry is not great in this deck, and Toolcraft Exemplar is great when it's great and pretty bad the rest of the time.
Yeah. Let's go on to
Glorybringer in a film with so many Fatal Pushes. I think Glorybringer is really powerful.
Yeah, I do too. I think that, you know, when we look at this Standard format, you know, I think there's a reason that the four color, like, and we'll get to that this later. If you look at, like, the four color energy decks that are teamer based that did really well, they all mostly played Glorybringer. And there were so many people trying such different stuff because of the Pro Tour, right? You had people trying maybe no Glorybringers, multiple confiscation queues. You had people trying things like big boats. And in all honesty, I think that Glorybringer, like, the second you draw your second Glorybringer in a game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just really hard to beat double.
It's just really hard to beat it.
Yeah. So. I think this list is kind of sweet. I have to mess around with that a little bit.
Coming up next, we have Soltai Energy. So I like to call this Soltai Snake to really help people understand, like, what the deck is doing. So this is like all I've been playing, Michael. I've played so many leagues with this deck.
There are a lot of ways to build it too. There's, like, a surprising number of flex slots.
Yeah. So I want to talk really quick about, like, first of all, the list we have on screen. So this list, I think, was one card different than the list that won the Pro Tour. He played the 4th Walking Ballista and didn't play the 2nd Vraska's Contempt. And I think it's literally the same list. And then in the main deck, at least. And then I want to talk really quick about a sideboard card, because this is actually an always improving moment for me. What is your opinion of Dai Young in the sideboard? Because I'm considering playing them in Portland.
Well, it kills Hazoret. And
that is the reason people are telling me to play it.
It is a 2-drop. Hazoret is probably pretty decent against you, just because you don't have Whirler, and you have, like, less Vraska's Contempt or Essence Scatter effects. It's, you know, I get that it's kind of a mopey magic card, but I think it might mopey magic card.
We tested these in Soul Tie-ish, green, blackish energy lists for Pro Tour Kaladesh, but it always was just kind of not good enough. And I have this sideboard slot, one to two of, in my sideboard for this or Doomfall. And I really like Doomfall because I find it to be multi-versatile. I play it against control, I can play it against aggro, I can play it against teamer, and then Dai Young is basically only good against aggro.
Yeah, it's true. I think a lot of it probably comes down to just, like, how many slots you need for different matchups. Yeah. You know, like, if you end up finding that you're kind of, you have enough control slots already, then you're a little bit less priced into trying to play versatile cards that can come into multiple matchups. And, I mean, my guess is that ultimately, just being a two-mana removal spell, like, makes it pretty playable against mono red, where something like Doomfall is a little bit of a tougher sell there.
So, let's talk really quick about this deck, because I'm super high on it. I think that one Vraska's Contempt in the main is too few, and I think that you're kind of with me there.
I think so, too. It's worse when you don't have Servant of the Conduit. And that's too bad, but
it's still not enough.
It's really good. That card is, like, better than...
I'm so surprised.
If you haven't played with it, it's better than you think it is.
I'm so surprised, dude. I never thought that I would be happy casting this 4-mana removal spell in Standard, but, like...
It just ends up being... It's better on tempo than you think it's going to be because of the life gain.
Because you kill bigger things so often, or the same things.
If you get a Glorybringer, or, like, a Vizier, or a Vehicle, or whatever... Like, so much of the time, it's such a big tempo swing for your opponent in a negative way that even though you had to pay 4 for it, it just doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it's been super surprising. So and the last...
Have you played that card against Hazoret?
Yes.
Your opponent spends the whole game trying to play a Hazoret, and you're just like, it often doesn't even get to attack. You're just like, yeah, exile it, game 2. Want to concede now or keep playing?
Yeah. I literally had my opponent play a Hazoret with 3 cards in hand, untap, discard Hazoret.
Yeah.
With their Hazoret, play land, attack me, and I was like,
so when I see that list with. When I see that Mardu list with 4 Glorybringers, that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing someone who's tired of trying to make Hazoret work against Whirler and Vraska's Contempt. Because so few decks have neither right now.
Yeah. And it's because of Hazoret, right? Like, Hazoret has warped the format around trying to make this happen.
Because if you don't play cards that are good against Hazoret, you get steamrolled by Hazoret.
So if you're in the Constructed Critics group, you know what I'm playing. I've talked about this before. I am playing a list like this. It does have Bristling Hydra, which has been insane for me, and it doesn't have 4 Rogue Refiner, which people like to... It's always the first thing people comment on. Michael and I have talked about this on the show before. The first time that this list did well, we were like, Rogue Refiner seems so out of place. But I finally have some in the deck, Michael. I am finally not playing 0 Rogue Refiner.
It's really good in the mid to late game. It's probably pretty good with Long Tusk Cub. It's good with Siphoner, but it's not
what it is in Teemer. In Teemer, it's like the glue.
It's in this deck. It's more of like an Elvish Visionary that's a better beater, right?
Exactly.
You way more need just the card, and that's okay. I mean, it's not bad. It's just worse than it is in other decks.
Let's talk about a deck that I played against 3 times in the league last week and beat every single time. Let's talk about Gift. So, Michael, where are you at on Sacred Cat? No, just kidding. Where are you at on Gift right now, man?
I want this deck to be good, kind of, because it's pretty sweet.
I mean, I think that we talked about this a little bit last week. Like, Chart a Course Strategic Planning is just way better than what they were doing before.
This deck is really cool, but I feel like, ultimately, it's just... You jump through so many hoops, and, like, we saw games where Pascal lost to Seth in the final, like, despite getting his combo engine set up. Like, it's like an unreasonable amount of work to do for something that doesn't guarantee you win. Like if your opponent has really a rampaging, but if your opponent has like a rampaging Ferocidon, you are certainly not a lock to win the game, even if you reanimate an Angel of Invention. If your opponent has Death Lord Scavenger, you almost can't win. Right? This deck has a lot of cards that are really, really good against it. And I don't know that your combo payoff is quite powerful enough for my taste.
So I do think that people still aren't playing enough hay for this deck. I think that right now, and this could very much not be true by next weekend because of how well this deck did. But as of this Triple GP weekend, people weren't playing enough hate. People still were acting like the deck didn't exist after it took a second at the Pro Tour.
Yeah, it's sort of a weird deck because it's like all the cards that are good against it are kind of bad in the mid-range mirrors, right? So you're kind of hoping that other people will do your job for you, and you're like, well, I'll just play the good in the mid-range version of my deck. I'll dodge Gift for two rounds, then they'll lose a match, and then I'll play decks that are playing a main deck Death Lord Scavenger and smash them. But if too many people have that idea, then
you're in trouble. Yeah, I think that that's really what happens. I think that I like this version of the deck better than the things that we were seeing earlier. I think that going back to the refurbished plan, especially with the cards that we have between strategic planning and
refurbished is really powerful.
But
playing this deck scares me a little bit. You're kind of soft to graveyard hate, but Rampaging Ferocidon is also just really good against you. And I'm not sure how comfortable I am with that given where Mono Red seems to be going these days.
Next up, we do have Approach decks. The deck on the screen is going to be Esper Approach. And the reason that I picked this deck is because of 4 Fatal Push.
Yeah, I remember talking with Austin before the PT, and we basically decided that you couldn't build this mana base, but maybe you can.
Yeah, but maybe Grandpa Atlanta disagrees with you.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly couldn't get a version of this mana base that didn't look like absolute dumpster fire.
Hold on. So this mana base is 4 Concealed Courtyard, 4 Drowned Catacombs, 4 Fetid Pools, 4 Glacial Fortress, 4 Irrigated Farmlands. This deck is not trying to cast a turn 1 Fatal Push. It's trying to cast a turn 2 Fatal Push.
And then play a tap land with it.
Or a tap land into an untap land, right? But what it is saying is Long Tusk Hub is a card.
Well, the real thing is you don't have to probably play any control mirrors. So, whereas before, we were kind of shelving this deck because we thought you'd play against a lot of duresses and, potentially lost legacies. So, if you just never have to play against that ever, I think that maybe that's an okay place to be. It also looks like he can sort of sideboard into, a deck that plays more like blue-black. He can side in, Vraska's Contempt, Scarab Gods, and Gearhulks, or he can side in Caracals. So, I think the list is relatively cohesive, but The mana looks a little scary to me. There are a lot of potential for tap lands.
You could play a game where you do not have an untapped land in the first three or four turns.
Yeah, I'm very scared of I really need my fifth land for Fumigate. Oh, it's Concealed Courtyard. I lose.
Hold on. But it's also playing 4 Fatal Push, 4 Opt, 4 Censor.
It knows
what it's doing.
Yeah, I do think that this list is, it's pretty elegant in a lot of ways, but I think just pretending that the mana isn't going to be a problem because someone won with it is, I think, a little disingenuous.
And I think
the
that
mana
if
is
I,
still going to be a problem.
No, it is. And I think that if I'm looking at this deck, I'm like, okay, what is problematic about this? And it has to be the 4 disallows. You have to say, double blue untapped on a reasonable time frame.
Double blue, double white plus black is a real rough.
Yeah. And so for me, I'm thinking okay, I probably don't need all 4 disallows. I can probably play, especially in this deck, some number of of the
Supremo.
Supreme Wills.
Yeah.
And then figure out the deck from there.
Yeah. I don't love everything about this deck, but I do think that if this deck is appealing to you, it's probably in a better spot, like hypothetically in the metagame, than it would have been before.
It was
just because I think you're playing less matchups where
I mean I like this really deck just so much time. Better than Blue White Approach. Like just the fact like he made his mana care about turn two
Fatal just push. Being able to kill Cub, because Cub is really, really hard on the draw for these decks.
Yeah. I think that being able to kill Cub is like better than anything. I played against Blue White Approach today with a Cub deck and smashed it. He literally double Aether Meltdowned my Cub, and it still dealt him like 12 damage.
Yeah, that's kind of disgusting.
Like, it just doesn't do anything. I must have had like 12 counters on that Cub. I mean, more than sure. that. It was so but many
then,
counters.
Yeah, and then if the only way you can deal with it is Fumigate, it's just a lot easier to it's play too around much. And
it's
play
too
to
much
beating
because you only have so many Fumigates, you only have so many. Oh.
The main thing is we're back to this same thing. You're going to get one chance to kill it. If your only way to kill it is Fumigate, you're going to get one chance to resolve a Fumigate, right. And if it doesn't resolve, you're dead.
Whereas a clean answer to it can just be that Fatal Push, and that's why I picked this list.
Yeah, also takes out Glintsleeve Siphoner, that kind of stuff. Like, Fatal Push is really, yep. really good in this format right now.
Yep. Which is so weird, right? Because, like, it was kind of meh last format,
yeah,
and now
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
like, everything.
Yeah, it is. It went from like okay because there were a lot of threes to basically the best spell in the format by a substantial margin.
Let's go on to our number two deck, which is Mono Red. I did include Ben Stark's deck in these rankings.
Oh man, Ben Stark's deck is sweet. I'm really sad that that's not what's on screen because that's the deck I want to talk about.
We can still talk about it. But.
I get that it's not really mono red, like it's
no, it
it's
is.
Sort of
it
gone
is.
Off the defend. But
so there's a reason that I put the deck on the screen that I put on, and that's because we didn't talk about the invigorated rampage technology that was adopted at the Pro Tour that people started playing.
Yeah, so I like this. Like there are sort of two thoughts with how you solve people being ready for Hazoret. So this card just craps on Whirler Virtuoso, right? Like invigorated right. rampage is one way you solve that problem. It just gives it, you play four main deck Rampaging Ferocidon, and you Invigorated Rampage, your Ferocidon, they double block, and your Hazoret, and they take a boatload.
They just die!
Yeah.
They just die. No, so I think that taking some of the Abrade slots is a little scary, but also makes some amount of sense. Like,
yeah.
Do I really need my Abrades right now? Probably not.
Yeah,
whereas Invigorated Rampage actually, like, solves a problem.
Insult to Injury seems a little loose to me. Like, that could very well just be your fourth Lightning Strike, and, you know, you could not be a psychopath, but...
Sure. But it's Shanghai.
Yeah, you know, you do what you want. I mean, he got second. It clearly worked out for him, so...
He does have four Abrade in the sideboard, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying his deck is bad. I'm certainly not saying anything like that. I'm just saying it scares me a little bit, that's all.
Yeah, I really like 24 lands with the... Like, this mana base is the mana base I've been playing with Mono Red. I always feel like I want the second Scavenging Ground in the sideboard and to, like, sideboard into a bigger red deck, which is what Ben Stark did. So why don't we talk about that really quick?
Okay, so Ben Stark's deck is labeled on Goldfish as Desert Red, and it is sweet. So it's still kind of like Mono Red, but you basically cut all the Hazorets for Sand Stranglers, and then you play main deck Treasure Maps because you're
sure, Ben
awesome.
Stark.
Can you're
we
awesome.
Just real question? Is this deck good or is Ben Stark great?
Sand Strangler might be great right now.
So I do think Sand Strangler is good. I've always I've literally never played a red deck without it. My problem is like we have a deck played by one of the top 15 players of all time that is kind of wonky.
Yeah, so it looks like the exact same 75 also 7-1 the mocks on Saturday.
Sure.
So I don't know whose account that is.
Or if it's a fake, if it's a ghost account or whatever.
Well, I mean, but it was happening at the same. So it's someone who knows Ben Stark, or right. he knows them somehow, because they were playing. They, you know, registered and were playing it at the same time. But it's basically the exact same 75, and I feel like he probably got a lot of mileage out of opponents putting him on sort of the wrong deck, and then like just playing the games badly. But his deck has a ton of removal, basically, like Sand Strangler, 3 Glorybringer, Magma Spray, Shock Upgrade, Lightning Strike, Chandra.
How do you feel about his split between Shock and Magma Spray?
I don't really know exactly what he's trying to exile.
That's my thought also.
I guess Scrap Heap Scrounger?
No, because like he doesn't care about it because it can't block still.
He's still
an aggro deck.
Kind of. I don't think he's nearly as aggressive as you think.
I mean,
he only has 7 1 drops, and he has 4 2 drops, 2 of which are treasure maps. This is a mid range deck. This is not like a beatdown aggressive deck.
Does this care about Scrounger, though?
I don't know.
I don't know.
That's the only thing you can really try to exile that I could possibly see caring about. So, I mean, I guess it's probably better against Godfrey's Gift, but I would imagine that this style of deck with 2 main deck Scavenger Grounds and Rampaging Procedon and Abrades.
If it dealt 3 and it exiled the 2 drop that gains life when creatures DB, I could see that. And then, like, maybe. What do you like against Godfrey's? Like Angel?
I mean, Mason's just saying you can, like, kind of kill a Scarab God with it.
That's stupid.
I mean, you have Scavenger Grounds, so you can kind of kill a Scarab God anyways. I mean, he probably just ended up deciding that he was enough of a mid-range deck that being able to occasionally exile a Scarab God, occasionally exile a Scrap Heap Scrounger, like, when he was winning, he wasn't winning by 1 point.
Sure.
That would be my guess.
So, I do think that this mono red deck and all of the mono red decks talk about the openness of this format. I think that they prove that mono red is open in this format, that this format is open, and that you can build your decks to try and attack the
format.
There
are a lot of good red cards.
Yeah,
looking at these decks, there are a lot of good different red cards. Like, if you look at this compared to the list,
the integrated Rampage list.
Compared to Trey Van Cleave in Atlanta has like 4 main deck Harsh Mentors. He has 10 2-drop creatures. Like, there are a lot of ways you can build this.
Yeah. Super shout out to Tilk, by the way, one of the listeners of the show. Attacked his Mardu deck a few weeks ago, but he did do well with Mono Red this weekend, X3ing the GP. So shout out to him. Let's go on to our first place deck, which. It's Team RNG, guys. Like, so first of all, we have 2 different lanes. I combined the 4 color and the teamer version because why wouldn't I? They're the same deck.
Yeah, it looks like they're combining them on Goldfish too. So.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, it's really gonna be a pain in the butt to split them out.
Yeah. So we have. I just want to talk really. So the reason that I had picked Corey and Brad's list is actually hated. I think that this list is terrible, and they won on the back of them being just, like, some of the best Magic players in the world right now.
Are we just back to the same list from months ago?
No, like, it has double Rivers of Yuke in the sideboard. It has...
Sure, I mean, yeah, we have a new set, but, like, the main deck is, like, literally the same from GP Denver, right?
No, so they don't have... So they have a few things missing. They don't have the Ronus in the main. They don't have Magma Spray in the main because... Obviously, you don't have to play against Mardu Vehicle as much.
Well, and we're on Mono Abrades, right?
So. Yeah, Mono Abrades now instead. And then I think they have an extra Confiscation Coup in the main. And then the sideboard is obviously completely different.
The list looks like that again, right?
Yeah, it's close. But I actually don't think that if you are an average human, that this list is correct. I think that what do they call themselves, the Bash Brothers right now? Like, if you are not them, you should not play this deck.
I mean, how many top 8s does Corey have in a row?
It's just
like
insane.
4
like,
or 5?
Literally.
He's killing it.
I think that these 2 players are on a tear that we will never see again And if you are not them, you should not play this deck. Like it's, this 75.
I'm just thinking about it. It's kind of insane.
It's actually too hard to play. Like, I'm looking at this deck, and I have zero idea how to sideboard.
I mean, my guess, ultimately, is that this list, if you just look at it, you can side into an insane amount of removal spells against mono red. You can bring in negates, you can bring in river, like, you just, it's flexible.
There's so many there's too much going on for my brain to handle. Now, that doesn't mean the list is bad, it means that I, as an average human, and that it's not Brad Nelson or Corey, just, I can't do this. Like, I can't do it. So, there's a reason that the black versions of this deck did better than the teamer versions of this deck this weekend. And that's because black gives you options that ease the thinking of this deck. Now, I'm not saying, like, if you're an amazing Magic player, but, like, these guys are playing four Bruising Hydras while everybody else is playing one or two. So the reason that that's happening is because they understand how to play their deck better than everybody else.
Yeah, I think the four-color versions are just a little bit... You have a couple more Haymakers, basically.
Right.
And I think that for a lot of players, just having more cards where, like, you can easily navigate the game to a state where, like, a Scarab God just wins the game or a Vraska just wins the game on its own is kind of appealing.
Right.
That being said, I think if you like the straight teamer deck, it's very clear that deck is pretty powerful, too. Basically, the main takeaway, I would say, is we're starting to see people play Confiscation Coup again as the main mirror breaker.
It is classic Corey and Brad, right? So,
but you see that in other lists too. It looks like Yuya played four color with two main deck Confiscation Coups.
Sure.
It looks like a lot of people have access to Confiscation Coup at least after boarding. And I would say generally there's more removal in these teamer decks than there was a week ago, which is why I assume Sultai didn't do as well. Because Sultai was lining up really well against the four Harness Lightning versions as the only removal, but pretty much all these lists have a Braid again, and a Braid is really good against Winding Constrictor.
Well, I also want to just talk really quickly about Corey's mana base, because I think that it's kind of a thing of beauty when you're looking at Teemer. Like, he's one land off of my mana base when I'm playing straight Teemer, and he's probably just smarter than I am. Like, I'm playing the second Sheltered Thicket over the third Spire Bluff, but, like, he just knows exactly what he needs.
Yeah, I mean, one of the main advantages the teamer gets is you don't have to play, like, any... Look at how many basic lands this deck gets to play. Your mana's just going to be way better. Like, even a single Swamp is pretty terrible to draw when you're trying to play, like, Orlo, right. Rope, Refiner, Bristling Hydra on consecutive turns.
I mean, specifically, when you think about the fact that your three mana is so strained between Rogue Refiner and Whirler, and that difference between red and green, like, the number of times that you draw a Swamp really strains how you have to play the game with those three drops in your deck.
Yeah, it does. I mean, your payoffs are pretty good, but drawing the Swamp is really bad. I'm not going to argue against that. And that's one of the issues with the four-color deck as well, is that when you draw in that deck, it's the Mountain or the Island. But when you draw the Mountain or the Island, you need to have them in the deck to attune for them. But it's kind of like playing basics in fetch land formats, right? Like, you need them in the deck sometimes so you don't get wastelanded, but when you actually just draw a basic forest instead of a fetch land, it feels awful.
So, Michael, this is the format. These are the top decks. I think that there were two more decks, by the way. Blue-Black Control and Blue-Black Midrange also had $1,000 finishes at GPs this weekend. What would you play and why? I mean, we're going to Portland this week. Like, you're getting in my car. We're going. Like, where are you at?
Okay. Well, I really like... There are probably, like, three decks I would realistically consider.
Are Teemer and Mono Red two of them?
Well, I like Sultai still.
Sultai Red?
Sultai Red deck. Sultai Red deck. And a lot of that has to do with comfort level. So I like that deck. I think it's good. I know basically exactly what list I'd like to play. If I play that, I'm pretty, like, satisfied with a lot of my matchups. And I think it's just okay in general. Jabberwocky just 5-0'd and had a 7-1 Mox finish with this like blue-black mid-range deck with a bunch of Charter Courses and Gifted Aetherborns and stuff like that.
Yep. That deck also did well at the GP.
Yeah, I want to check that deck out. Haven't had a chance to. And then I guess I lied. They're actually probably 4. I could see playing Mono Red, and I want to take a look. I basically just want to try a couple of decks with, like, a bunch of Glorybringers, because Glorybringer seems really good to me.
Sure. So, I'm set on Soul Tie right now. I think that... I think that not playing Bristling Hydra in this deck is a huge problem in the teamer matchup specifically. So, this is, like, a situation that's happened a lot against teamer, is we both have Glorybringers, but I have Snake. And then my opponent, like, thinks about it for a second and then concedes. Like, this has happened on Magic Online 3 times. Where they're like, oh, I actually can never profitably block for the rest of this game. And while nobody on... it's weird. I actually think that paper is ahead of Magic Online for the first time ever. Because I'm not playing against, like, a ton of Abrades yet.
Yeah, I think people maybe just didn't... People are slower to adapt and are still playing Pro Tour lists, but I think that, like, Soul Tie does well. Suddenly, there are 7 2 drop removal spells, because, like, that whole operation gets shut down if people are just able to consistently kill your Whining Constrictors, right?
But I do think that, while that's true, it's also the reason that I have less Hostage Taker and more, and I actually am playing Bristling Hydra. And that's where I'm at right now. I don't see myself changing. My win percentage is pretty high. You know, you can join the Constructed Critics group, become a patron of $5 or more, and see kind of what I'm doing. Who knows if it's good? Like, I'm just a lowly, not even wood level pro yet, so.
Magic's hard, and sometimes it's hard to tell if you're doing the best thing or merely an okay thing.
It's hard, man. Magic's tough.
Like, you can win without doing the best thing. I think that,
I think that what we learned from this weekend, though, is that while, like, a lot of the decks play a Tomb of Aether, also, holy crap, you can do a lot of things and win a lot of money playing Magic right now.
Do you really feel like this deck is even sort of similar to Soul Tie? It's really not. Like, they both play...
I also think that every time somebody's like, they're all a Tomb of Aether decks, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to say that Teemer... Soul Tie and Soul Tie Red are all completely different decks.
It's like lumping Brainstorm decks together, right? It's like they all play Brainstorm. They're the same deck. Yeah, no, it enables a lot of the good stuff because Kaladesh as a block is powerful.
It's the only way that you can... First of all, it's the only way you can play more than 2 colors, like, reasonably. All of the 3-color decks play energy, right? If you look at, like, Grixis, Thopters, it played energy. But if you look at Esper...
It's more of a Kaladesh block problem in general, right? Yes. Like, the Kaladesh cards are just better than the other cards, and, like, you can call that a mistake or whatever, but you're not going to ban an entire block, so chill.
Yeah. And banning a Tomb of Aether would ban so many decks.
Like, it would also be the worst banning of all time in, like, on the embarrassment scale. Like, actually banning Lay of the Land is just, would be one of the funniest things.
It wouldn't be funny, dude. It would be funny.
There's a part of you that admits it would be funny to ban Lay of the Land.
You know what's not funny is how much we appreciate our patrons. You can go to patreon.com/CCNB to become a patron of this show. We really appreciate all the support we get. It actually literally does lift up my day. It makes everything better. So thank you so much to all of our patrons. It does mean the world to us. The show will always be free. That will never change, but we do appreciate those who can support us. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer Each. You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Halland. You can join the Constructed Criticism Facebook group by just searching Constructed Criticism Family. You can find Magic Mike at Magic Mike MTG on Twitter. You can also find him in the Constructed Criticism Family on the Constructed Critics group if for patrons of $5 or more. And you can see his sweet, sweet list as well as I looked at this. This is way too much sideboarding information, Michael. Which
I wrote it all in a notebook and brought it with me. And then was flipping through it. Yeah.
Sick time, tech. Huh? So if you want way too much sideboarding information for the deck that Michael just qualified for the Pro Tour, just go to the Constructed Critics group, become a patron of $5 or more. You can join the conversation also by joining the Discord channel. I'm trying to figure out how to make that work. It's so funny. You silo conversations in certain places, right? So, like, the Constructive Criticism family, people just check it. They go to it. And for a while, the Discord channel was super active. I want to make both happen because I think that they serve different markets. But, yeah, you can join the Discord channel. You can go to constructivecriticism.com. Check out the bios page. You can find it. Join the clan by messaging me at Spencer13Dev. I'm on MCU a lot now. You can also message Quentin if he's online at Earthstripe. That's URTHSTRYPE. You can message Michael if you have any questions about why pineapple on pizza is terrible. And you can tweet at us with hashtag would that be good. Hashtag
don't message me about pineapple on
Michael,
pizza.
Michael, you're interrupting me. Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, we'll read it, as Michael likes me to say. And let's go to, what is, we need to go to the 7th?
Let's see, yes. Yes, it is the 7th. And the first tweet is from Kiora's follower, trying to figure out how to be like all the cool kids with their 280 Twitter characters. Wait a minute, looks like we got there. So little to say, so many characters to say it with. Hashtag would that be good. Hashtag whitelisted. Hashtag just filling space at this point. Hashtag what is the deal with this circle? Yeah, 280 characters is like a lot more than I need.
Just so many characters.
I mean, like, I think I probably need
like
four.
I don't think I've used them yet other than the first tweet.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I just don't need a Twitter account at all.
Oh, Michael. That seems like a you problem.
I mean, you'd have to want to read what I had to say, and, like, I don't know that I want to read what I have to say, so.
But our listeners do, Michael. Our listeners do. Let's go. Taking Magic My Game GPT list 2-5 on MTG. Hashtag, would that be good? Oh, to 2-5-0s! Oh, I read that wrong. Yes, that would be good.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Lonnie ended up playing something else at the PPDQ, but that he played this weekend. But I do think my deck is pretty good. You know, I don't know that it's perfect, but if you can handle a bad mana base, it might be worth trying.
Andrew says, woke up my wife because I was laughing too loudly at Frank Laporte getting blown out by main deck Solemnity while on Infect. LOL, hashtag would be good. No, main deck Solemnity seems terrible.
But it sounds funny to like. It sounds like a funny way to lose a game. I'm kind of into that. Like, it's just amusing to be like, well, main deck Solemnity. Guess none of my creatures do anything anymore. That's awkward.
Adrian says the best daggers are when you clown other podcasts during the show. Mason,
I feel like that was Mason. Yeah, specifically. Well, oh, that's at Mason.
It's at Mason. No. Don't do that.
But
we
it was kind of
do
funny.
Not. We do not. So I do this on purpose, and I've been told by so many listeners that they really appreciate it. But like, we try not to be controversial on this because it doesn't add anything other than controversy. So like, why do it?
Well, that's why it's funny when it slips out every once in a while, right?
Yeah. I mean, so like, it was. I did laugh off air after Mason talked mad stuff on the podcast. He doesn't like, but also Mason, just don't listen to podcasts you don't like. Like, it seems like such a simple solution. Like, just don't listen, man. Don't listen. And for those of you who sacrificed, but others did not. Hashtag would that be good? So Thomas listens to the podcast, but I don't know what this means.
I'm not even seeing that tweet, so. No, but Mason, I legitimately don't see that tweet. So I
Mason
might be
says
searching.
Mason says it's Veterans Day, which is awesome.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense, but I still don't see that tweet. So.
Okay. It's because his Twitter account is locked, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well.
Forgot to post the deck. Hashtag would it be good. This is a deck that I believe Adrian went 2-1 with. And it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 2-drop creatures, which is usually good in this format.
It is, but and it has Vraska's Contempt, and it looks okay.
Yeah, the deck looks sweet. Adam Spain says, wife wants to join the always improving movement, wants to contend our next game day. Hashtag would be good. So I wish my wife would do this. She actually has a winning record in Magic. She's like super smart, but super anti-competitive. It's really funny when you watch Debonair play Magic. Like she was 2-0 at a tournament and was playing mono red and like was casting what was the spell mastery deal 2, deal 3?
Fire Impulse.
Yeah, so she was casting a Fire Impulse and was apologizing to her opponent as she killed them. She's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm going to deal that 3 and an attack, and I'm so sorry." And like killed them, and her opponent was fuming because she's like, they felt like she was slow rolling them, when in fact she just feels bad for killing them.
She was apologized rolling them. That's great. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think she's 3-1 all time in Magic events, and she never played another one.
Yeah.
Both my co-hosts are qualified for the next PT. Congrats to Magic Mike on his RPTQ today. Hashtag would be good. I don't know, man. I don't know what you are, but it's not human.
I was happy. There were a lot of good matchups in that room, so.
You can read this next one.
All right. Spencer says, "I just want a friend who is as excited to see me as Chantel is to see this dumpling."
Hashtag look at her face!
Yeah, Chantel looks really happy to be eating dumplings.
Look at that!
I understand, but I told Spencer that I think he's aiming too high. Like, dude, you're not going to have friends look at you like that.
Michael, why don't you love me this much?
I don't know that I love anything that much.
I'm just saying, Chantel, who is the host of Proven Combatants, you can check them out on constructivism.com. She is, I mean, I think that it's a tiny dumpling that's exciting her, right? But like, come on, man. Like, I love you. You love me. Like,
I don't get that excited about anything. Yeah, it just, it's not in me. It's not in my emotional range.
Get off that Xanax and love me, man. All right. So much trash talking in my Facebook group before this weekend's event. Love the competitive spirit. Hashtag would that be good. Honestly, I feel like we don't trash talk each other very much. Other than Matt Kling. I feel like we all talk trash on Matt Kling.
I don't know. I'm just not a big trash talker. I feel uncomfortable, and then
you should hear Manny. So today, Manny called Casey on speakerphone and berated him for the Giants losing to the 49ers.
I mean,
and it was uncomfortable. The things that Manny said were not appropriate for this podcast.
It's kind of funny, though. They did lose the 49ers.
It was embarrassing. We're going to skip the next tweet because I've already addressed this with Andrew at least 17 times. So, Andrew, you're wrong, and we can move on. Sometimes when Spencer talks about Vraska Relic Seeker, it reminds me of how people talked about Jace the Mind Sculptor back when he was in Standard. Hashtag would be good. I hope I don't sound like that.
No, I mean, Vraska's just better than she looks. Like, she looks really mediocre, then you have her in play, and just, like, she has so much more loyalty than it feels like a Planeswalker should. When you plus something to 8 and it makes a blocker, it's just like, it's really hard to kill a Vraska if your opponent decides that an important part of the game is Vraska sticking around. That was mostly my takeaway with that card. Like, 8 loyalty is, you almost, on like turn 6, if you're playing a deck that attacks, there's almost no way that, like, they don't just have the same amount of life as loyalty on Vraska, right? Like, you can kill it with, like, a Vraska's Contempt or something, or you can counter it, but, like, if they plus it, you're not attacking the Vraska to death. It's just not happening. 8 is so many.
Yeah, it's so many. Also, I just want to say that what just happened in Twitch chat was, like, the highlight of my night. I want to thank everybody for listening. Michael, what did you just learn this night?
I learned that there are a lot of
Bringer way more.
Okay, I love Glorybringer, but I also love Treasure Map, and like the fact that there's a deck that actually is maybe good that plays Treasure Map gets me really secretly excited, because I think Treasure Map is like the most flavorful Magic card of all time, and I love it immensely, and I really, really, really just want to play Treasure Map always. So the fact that like I maybe could do it and not be wrong is probably more exciting to me than it should be, but it's like really exciting.
Yeah. I learned that. Did you just read Twitch chat?
No, I'm not in Twitch. I just really excited about Treasure Map.
Oh, okay. I learned that...
Like, if you give me a treasure map every time you see me, I will look at you like Chantel looks at that dumpling.
I learned that Michael doesn't love me enough because he doesn't look at me the way that Chantel looks at that dumpling. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Don't forget that Mason is awesome for doing the stuff that he does. You can go to patreon.com/ccmg to support the show, and we'll see you guys all next week. Magic.